You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
In the mid-20th century, hundreds of Barnabans were displaced from Barnaba Island to Fiji's Rambi Island due to the devastating impacts of phosphate mining. Today, Barnabans on Rambi continue to face discrimination as a partially self-governing entity falling between the cracks of Fiji and Kiribati. Their stories remain largely unheard in Aotearoa, New Zealand, where the benefits of mining allowed the British to advance their colonisation and kickstart New Zealand's agricultural sector. 95BFM digital sub-editor Stella Huggins speaks to Katia Futaraksa Neef and Erin about the forced displacement of the Barnaban community and their ongoing human rights struggles, as well as their new art exhibition titled Justice for Rambi, The Story of Barnaba. She also speaks to Jack, a Barnaban delegate, on this topic. Here they are now.
In the early 1900s, the British Phosphate Company found phosphate in a few places in the Pacific, including Barnaba, which is sort of the story that we're telling here. And the British Phosphate Company then became jointly owned by the British, Australian, and New Zealand government, which is the New Zealand connection there. The British Phosphate Company then went on to mine 90% of the island's surface on Barnaba, and then in 1945 forcibly relocated the Barnaban community to an island in Fiji, Rambi Island, where most Barnabans live now. The population is about 5,000, and there's currently a resident sort of caretaker population on Barnaba of about 200 Barnabans at this time, but it's quite inhospitable conditions to live on Barnaba. Obviously, it's been mined very intensely for almost a century, and that is the backstory there. And the phosphate that was mined from Barnaba was used to prop up the growing settler population in New Zealand, which is the connection there. So we all sort of benefit from the use of the phosphate from Barnaba for agriculture, as in the form of fertilizer here in New Zealand.
The Barnaba Ocean Island is a high limestone phosphate atoll between the westernmost edge of Kiribati and Nauru in the northern Pacific Ocean. The island is located approximately 400 kilometers from Kiribati and 300 kilometers from Nauru. It has historically been inhabited by the Barnaban people, an indigenous group with a distinct culture and one of the few ethnic in the Pacific that had individual of land. The Barnaban people were forcibly displaced from the island in the mid-20th century due to the devastating impacts of phosphate mining.
So where did the funding come from for this work, and how are you implementing that funding to share the stories of the Barnaban people?
Yeah, so we have funding from a few different places. We have the bulk of the funding from Creative New Zealand, and their funding is going towards making the exhibit possible, so the installation of the actual works, commissioning artworks, as well as the bulk of the travel for our delegation of 11 guests from Rambi, 8 Barnaban dancers, including a choreographer, and 3 representatives from the Rambi Council, who will be arriving on Saturday. So that's from Creative New Zealand. We also have small grants from UNESCO New Zealand, the Taiwan Foundation for Democracy, and Amnesty International. And that's helping to fund all of the other bits and pieces to make the exhibit possible. And there's also a component from Creative New Zealand that's paying for translation of the report. So obviously there's a key advocacy component of this work as well, not only telling these stories, but also connecting it to some of the key demands from the Rambi community in particular. And so that report that was done jointly by ICAD, representatives of the Rambi Council, and our pro bono law firm partner, Clifford Chen, will be translated to the Kiribati language, which is a part of that funding as well.
How did you ensure that you were sort of a vessel, so to speak, for their stories rather than an imposing presence taking their stories and redistributing it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And Katya and I have been asking ourselves and checking ourselves on this question over and over again. So the approach that we took on Rambi was to record interviews so we can actually just sort of literally be the vehicle to take those stories and then to just project them literally on screens here in the silo. permission and asked how they wanted them to be shared, if they wanted them to be shared in what way. And there's a great quote, and we heard it from multiple interviewees, saying that they were happy to be interviewed and for it to be recorded on the condition that it's shared with the world. And bringing the delegation here, connecting them with key players, key development partners as well, and allowing them to share their stories directly with the media at our event and in our communications as well.
How do you feel that it's best for the citizens of Aotearoa, or anywhere really, to engage with this content and honour Rabi's story and experience?
Well, they should know about the Barnaba. Well, they were moved to another island from Barnaba, so this is to show them that we should be the last people to be relocated from our land. Is to tell them that it should be that we should be the last group of people.
Yeah, and in the face of climate change, there's going to be probably more displacement and relocation in the future, and we want the story of Rambi and the story of Barnaba to not be forgotten, as we don't want this to happen in the future where people lose their land, lose their identities and their language due to mining or climate change. And we don't want this story to be forgotten or put into the past, but remembered. And also, this is an ongoing issue and there are human rights violations, and we need to make sure that we protect their right to life with dignity on Rambi and also on Barnaba.
Yeah, I think the first step is learning this history. It's really important not only to know sort of how it implicates sort of the history of the lands that we're currently on and the stories of how we're able to be here and how there's such a large, obviously, settler colonial population here at all, but also as we think about climate displacement going forward and what it means to be displaced and how to live and how to accommodate living a life with dignity in new places and what that actually looks like and what some of those barriers are. So learning not only the history but also what it means for us forward, it's really important. But there are also direct ways that people can support by donating to the Barnaba Women's Organization. One of the challenges that has come up that the Rambi community faces is sort of a lack of development assistance by the nature of their semi-autonomous state under the Fiji government. So any donations in Koha go a long way to supporting the work that they're doing to preserve their cultural identity and obviously basic human rights outcomes as well. We'll also have an open letter coming out with the key demands from the Rambi community, and then as much support and sharing about the exhibit so that more people can come through. It's probably the easiest lift for people just to spread the word. We'll have a virtual exhibit that will be launched as well, continuing to share these stories not only in Auckland but around the world. So that's a great way that people can share and spread the word.
That was 95BFM digital sub-editor Stella Huggins speaking to Katia Futadaksa Neef, Erin and Barnabin delegate Jack about the forced displacement of the Barnabin community and their ongoing human rights struggles, as well as their new art exhibition titled Justice for Rabi, The Story of Barnaba.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.